Hello, welcome to the Apple Cart, a podcast brought on by business owners who like to upset the proverbial corporate apple cart. They do things in a different way, creatively, disruptively, and occasionally randomly. I'm your host, Gudrun Lorette. Hello and welcome back to the Apple Cart. My guest today is Laura Robinson. She's a marketing and copywriting mentor for online business owners. And I'm going to be honest and say that I am one of Laura's clients. Laura's really good at the things that I'm not so good at. So she helps me to do better with things like sales pages. And also, let's be honest, just marketing myself, because that is, I think, a problem for most small business owners. Laura, thank you very much for being here. Would you say that marketing is a challenge that people just don't want to do it?
I think I definitely attract people who find it really cringy and uncomfortable. I think probably because even though that's what I do, like I've been in online marketing, I did marketing in my corporate job before I did this, and I've had this business for 10 years. So a long time I've been doing this for. Yeah. I still find it extremely cringy and uncomfortable for myself. And I'm really like open and honest about that. So I think, I don't know whether it's a problem that I just happen to see a larger proportion of people with that problem because I'm so open about it that I kind of attract them to me.
Yeah. And I wonder if it's a specific problem with creatives. I was talking to Christina Adams. You probably know Christina. She's a novelist as well as a copywriter. And she was saying how icky she finds that self-promotion. And I wonder if it's a creative thing where, because we feel like we're making wonderful art, that we think that should just be given away for free rather than...
Yeah, I think there's partly, you're probably used to going with inspiration first and following that. So when you create something, it comes like there's a spark, there's something in you that wants to create it. And so you just go with that flow. Whereas when you write for marketing or create videos or even like create graphics marketing, you're starting out with a function. Mm-hmm. And like there's a purpose, there's a goal, there's I need it to achieve something, and then working backwards from that. So it is a completely different process. And I think for some people that it can feel like uncomfortable and manipulative, because you aren't creating from a space of like, I have to do this, like, you know, I can't keep it inside me, I have to share this with the world. Yeah. You're creating because you think, I have to make some money, and to be yes. able to do that, I need to send out this email, and so now I need to figure out what I'm going to write about.
Yeah, one of the things I saw you post, I don't know if it was in your Facebook group or just on Facebook, was about why we all struggle with pricing. And what you said was, when we've all been employees, we've never had to do that. Somebody else has assigned a value to our work and our skills. And now we're in charge of that ourselves. And that's really hard.
Yeah, I do a lot of mindset work, and I do believe in this idea of like that we can hold ourselves back, and some, you know, there's some subconscious beliefs going on there. But also, I think a lot of the times it's a much more obvious answer. So if you're struggling to set a price to something, you could spend a lot of time like breaking down, what's my relationship with money, and why do I find this difficult, and why don't I trust myself or value my worth, and all of those kind of things. Or you could just get really honest with yourself and say, what are the, like, how is this logical? In what way is it logical that I would find this difficult to do? Well, I've never told somebody what I'm worth before. If I've ever bought something, it's had a price on it in a shop. And I'm in Britain, we don't haggle. If that's the price is in the shop, that's the price that we pay. Like, there's no question, for the price is the price. And with salaries, I mean, I guess once you get to kind of managerial position, there's a bit more wiggle room, but they usually come with a bracket. So you're told you're going to get paid somewhere between this amount and that amount. And there's a very small amount of wiggle room. So, like, yes, there is a whole bunch of mindset stuff going on there, but also we just haven't done it before. And just like anything, when you haven't done it before, the more you do it, the easier it gets and the less of a big deal that it seems.
Yeah, I want to ask you about doing things a bit differently in business. Now, we're talking on Zoom, but I know that when you're doing client calls and things, you don't use Zoom. Can you talk a little bit about why you do that differently, and do your clients just go along with it, or do you ever have people going, can't we just use Zoom?
So I, like everybody else, I think, when I set up my online business, everything was on Zoom. Like that was just how I thought it was done. And I'm a copywriter, like my one-to-one skill, one-to-one service I sell is copywriting services. And, you know, it was going really well, but I also have chronic migraine, and it was well managed for a long time. But Quite understandably, at the end of 2019, it started to flare up. We were having a big building project at our house, and I moved in with my parents for a few months. And then it was COVID, and so my migraine flared up, and it never calmed back down again. And I saw, like, pushed on through, and then towards the end of 2021, it was really bad. Like, I was thinking, I can't work. I'm going to have to stop work. This is so debilitating, and my availability is so unpredictable that I struggled to take on one-to-one copywriting clients because I didn't want to let anyone down. Mostly I was writing sales pages, and when they needed them, like, they needed them because they had a launch coming up, they needed the money that sales page was going to generate. So I started to feel really low about it. I took a break over the Christmas period, didn't work, and my migraines went away. I came back to work in January, and I had a 2-hour Zoom call to kick off my working week, and I was laid out with a migraine for like the next 3 days. So I just decided I wasn't doing it anymore. That sounds like a simple decision, but it really wasn't. All my one-to-one copywriting clients started with a Zoom kickoff call. They had update calls all the way through the project. I was on a retainer with someone that paid me like a few hundred pounds a month to have Zoom calls with me, and I had to let that go. And I was a copywriting coach in somebody else's mastermind, and I got paid a few hundred pounds a month for that as well. And I had to let that one go as well. So it was a big deal to say, I can't do this anymore. And I did it from a place of, if I stopped work completely, what would people miss out on? Like, not just drop Zoom, but if I didn't do another day work, what would people be missing out on? And I was trying to imagine, like, what are the ways that they would tempt me to come back to work? Like, if I paid you £1,000, would you do this for me? And I'd be willing to work with you in this way. So I just sort of played around with the idea in my head, and like my idle dreams. Imagine people begging to work with me because they still wanted to access my skills, and I still wanted to be paid for them, but I didn't want to work in that format anymore. And I just came up with one-off days, VIP days, and we did it all via Voxer. So I was doing some copywriting for them. They were doing it. We were co-working on a Google document, and all the interaction was via this walkie-talkie app called Voxer. And I loved it, and it sold really well. It was sustainable for me. And then people did those days, and they asked, like, how can I work with you long term? And they were happy to do that via Voxer because I'd already introduced them. Like, we'd had a day together. They knew that that worked. And then that was it. Though almost all of my client work now happens via Voxer. And I do Zoom to do podcast interviews because this would be very difficult via Voxer. But yeah, the majority of my work is communicating either on my course platform via email or via Voxer.
When I was talking to Christina, because she has fibromyalgia, and we were talking about balancing your health and your energy, because I have a couple of chronic health conditions that mean I get tired easily. Well, we're talking about how important it is to prioritize your health, but also to explain that to people and to be brave enough to say, look, I can't work like this. That doesn't mean I'm bad at my job. It just means that I have to have these adjustments. And I think a lot of people kind of get to that when they're in a business, they're working for somebody else, where you can't do it anymore. That the main reason for me being self-employed was just that sometimes I have to have a nap at a random time of the day. And when you're an employee, they don't like it when you have a nap in the middle of the day. So it's, I got to the point where I just could not do a job because I had an overwhelming need to nap.
Same. And I've got a there's like a chapter. I've got a book that's about having a business that's more comfortable. And in one of the chapters, I talk about that the things that meant you didn't ha that you couldn't have a job. Like, most of us, or most of the people that I work with, are self-employed because we tried a career and that was a disaster. Like, that was not going to work. This is not for me. Maybe we started out with the idea that we'd have a short break and go back to it, which is what I thought I'd do. Or maybe we just bailed out completely and went, nope, never going to have a job again. But the things that meant that you weren't compatible with the job, you're bringing those with you into your business, and they will still make life hard as a business owner. And I see sometimes people beat themselves up because their business isn't growing fast enough, or they haven't achieved this thing, or that they feel like they're behind from where they should be, but they haven't factored in, like, well, I left my job because I'm caring for a 3-year-old and an elderly grandparent, or I'm living with this health condition. That still counts. Like, that's, even though your business is more flexible and you're at home and you can nap when you need to, that is still impacting how quickly your business can grow. So those things haven't gone away. You've just flexed around them.
Yeah, and you've got to be kind to yourself. If that's what you need to do, then and you do that. And I think the thing is it, for me, I knew I couldn't really do a full-time job, but I did keep trying, and I kept trying for far longer than I should have done. So I think it's about being brave enough to go, actually, this traditional way of working just isn't working for me.
If you want to have a bit more liberation from that, I find it really interesting to research where the traditional ways of working a week. Why are the days Monday to Friday? Why do we work as many hours as we do? Why do children go to school? Why do they go for the term dates that they do? Like, once you dig into the why of things, it's much easier to just shrug and go, well, that really doesn't apply anymore. So I don't like, we don't need to conform to that anymore. And when things change, when there's mass change, there always has to be those early adopters that go, yeah, I don't really believe in full-time work. That doesn't make any sense. So we're the pioneers, just shrugging off the whole days of the week concept and the 40-hour working week.
We should all be more pioneers. And children, until, was it about 150 years ago, children weren't considered children. They were just small adults. Like, there's no, I've read this somewhere, there was no awareness that a child wasn't the same as an adult.
Like developmentally, they're not, yeah.
They're just small. And
Yeah.
then they'll stop being small and they'll be big. And so there was no sort of, there wasn't school or anything like that, because they're just small adults.
Yeah. And I think like school started in the poorhouses as well. I just find that like really the whole evolution of the school system very interesting, which then made it much easier for me to sack it off with my own kids. I find that's just how I get brave to do things that are a bit unusual. I like to understand, like, what is the thing that I'm throwing in the bin? Let me understand it really well and where it came from. Okay, now I'm ready to just put it in the bin and do things my own way.
I love that. I love that you've given it some thought and gone, yeah, okay, but that's just nonsense, isn't it? And gone, yeah, fair enough, I've had enough of that. You've just mentioned your book, and it's an amazing book. I'm looking around my office, I've got a copy of it somewhere. Tell me a little bit about that and what inspired you to write that, because I've been talking a lot with other guests about books and things, so tell me about yours.
I have no idea why I wrote it. I had no appetite to write a book whatsoever. It wasn't, you know, people feel like, I have a book in me. I can't wait to write that. No, not interested. I wasn't going to write a book. I had a collection of thoughts about why I just like why I'd shaped my business the way I had. I had like my backstory of how I left my job and how difficult life was when I left my job. I had two young children. I shared it on podcast, but I'd never really written it down somewhere. So I wanted to write that down. So I got that down. It lived in my, I use a thing called Notion where I store all my ideas and everything. So that lived there. So that was kind of a bit of the book. I did a talk at Atomicon. I got to talk on stage and like, bless Andrew and Pete, I'm pretty certain they thought I was going to talk about writing sales pages. And I got up there and I talked about how hard it is to be self-employed and how important it is to look after our mental health. And I had an amazing reaction from people about
I was
that. So
there
I,
in the
yeah,
room. Yeah, it was fantastic.
it was good. And I hated the whole, did not enjoy being on stage. It didn't make me think I want to do that again. But at the end, people came to talk to me. And then in the bar afterwards, people came to talk to me. And I was like, this is incredible. Like, I want to talk about this more. So I wrote down everything I put in that talk and some of the things I said to people afterwards. I wrote that down. So then that was like another bit of the book, but I still didn't know it was going to be a book. And then I just had a couple of experiences where I really felt like, people like us who are, I think we are flipping incredible. Like we are scrappy as heck. We like look at the cards we've been dealt and we're like, yep, still gonna make a living out of this. Like, I'm somehow gonna cobble together a business and I'm gonna support myself and I'm gonna make this work. And I would meet people like that who I really admired and I'd hear them put themselves down because I haven't, oh, but I should have this many subscribers or I don't earn this much money or it's taken me this long. And I'd be looking at them like, how can you think this about yourself? Like the things that they had been through, what they'd been able to achieve. I saw them in a different way that they saw themselves. But I also realized I did not see myself that way. So all the things they were saying about themselves, I was saying about myself. And I just felt like we needed something where someone was writing, hey, it's okay, like it's okay, it's absolutely fine. You don't have to have a business that's going to want venture capital investment and take over the world and turn over millions. You don't even have to turn over six figures. You don't ever have to have another single employee. Like you can just do it however you want, and you're still an absolute hero, and you still achieved amazing things because you decided what you wanted and you went out and you got it. And so I kind of cobbled together all these notes that I had no intention of making into a book, and kind of relented and went, yeah, that's going to be a book. But it's a really short book because we don't have a lot of time for reading because we need to take naps. And it's got a lot of reflection questions because I don't want to tell people how they're feeling, and I don't want to tell people how they should do things. So what I've done is share, like, this is how it was for me, and this is how I created movement around this issue, or, changed my perspective on it. Here's some questions that might help you do the same.
And I think that's really refreshing for business owners, because I know when I started, it was all like, you've got to be really ambitious. And this thing about six figures, God, I hate hearing that. Oh, six figure business. Well, what does that even, that doesn't mean anything. And I think the fact that not only are you not running your business like that, and lots of other people aren't, is that we're talking about it. And like for me, because I sleep a lot, my business has been effectively what you'd call a lifestyle business. And for like a lifestyle business was sort of sneered at. Oh, you only want a lifestyle business, don't you want to be making 20K a month? Well, yeah, all right, give me 20K a month, but I can't work, I can't do an output for that. I want to just be comfortable and work because I enjoy it, and that should be enough. That should be more than enough.
And the things that you have to do to have a business that size is different to the. So it's not just about the amount of work you're doing, it's the type of work. So, because I'm a copywriter, the very obvious suggestion for a lot of business coaches has been open an agency. So, hire some copywriters, hire some proofreaders. They can all be freelance, they don't have to be employees. And you make some packages, and then you go out and you sell to people, other businesses, like corporate deals, tens of thousands of pounds per deal. And then the copywriters do the writing for you. And I was like, where, what, why would that be fun? Like, the bit I like is the writing. Like, I don't want to go and speak to corporates. I don't want to sell stuff. Like, that's not fun for me. I have one person that works for me, and that works amazingly. But I think she would heartily recommend that nobody else work for me because it is a disaster area. Like, I'm not an easy person to work with. Can't imagine running a team. So it's not just about the amount of hours you'd have to put in. It's the energy that you would have to bring to that type of work, and like, what would you be getting out of it? Like, when I write, that recharges me. So it does take energy out of me, and I do need to have like focus to be able to do it. But I don't feel like completely spent at the end of a day writing. I feel like, well, I'm glad I did that. I'm really proud of what I've created. But if I had to spend the day, I don't know, pitching corporates, I'd probably have to go and hide in a hole for 3 months to recover. So it's not really going to be sustainable for me.
No, and that you wouldn't be able to manage your team if you were in a hole. And I mean, managing a team doesn't appeal to me either. I mean, very early on, my first proper job was at a local authority, and it was not long after my A levels, so I was quite young, and at that point in time, I had two male managers. I was actually an admin working across two teams, and they were quite ambitious. And they were quite ambitious on my behalf. And I remember thinking, oh, yeah, that sounds amazing. I could rise through the ranks of the council, and I could be managing a team. And then very quickly, it turned out that what we'd all thought was, well, we just thought I was a hungover teenager, was actually a chronic problem that meant I couldn't stay awake at a full do a full day's work. I used to sleep in the ladies' toilets. And a friend used to come and get me. And I think once that happened, that sort of killed any ambition I had about being a team leader at the council. But it just means you just reframe your ambitions and your ideas. It doesn't mean that you're a failure.
It doesn't
It's
sound like they were your ambitions anyway.
and I don't
Like,
think they were. No.
and I say that from the perspective of someone, like, when you just said they were very ambitious for me, I was like, oh, that, like, I felt that with every fiber of my being. When I was 10, I was like marked as one of the ones that was likely to pass my 11 plus. And it was really important for my primary school to get as many people through the 11 plus as possible. So I became very aware that whether, I mean, I actually kind of enjoyed that bit. So that was like, I wanted to do it, but I was also aware that that was not just my responsibility to pass my 11 plus. Like, I was doing it for the head teacher who I loved. And then you went to school and it was all about like, but we need to get this far on the league tables because we need to beat these other schools. So you need these exam results so that we're this far on the league tables. And I went to uni and it was exactly the same. Like, we need to have this many people go into employment straight after their degree. And then when I got into my job, exactly what you said, like ambitious on my behalf. And it took me so, and when I left, like, oh, you know, I was throwing it all away because I could have had this amazing corporate career. And it took me a long time to realize, of course, those managers were saying I had ambition. They were going to take me with them because I was doing 80% of their job. Like, I was doing so much work that they were getting credit for. Of course, they were saying, like, I'm gonna rise to be director and I'm gonna take you with me. Like, yeah, of course you are, because you can't do it without me.
I
But
love.
I felt like it was me, like, oh no, I must fulfill my ambition. And it took a long time to
Yeah,
come to
you
terms with the
do.
fact that wasn't my ambition at all. It was theirs, and it was pretty obvious why they had it.
And I love it when you see other like entrepreneurs talking about how they left a glittering corporate career and everybody said they were mad, you know. Like even one of my favorite, in fact, my only favorite recipe blogger, because I don't follow recipe bloggers, is an Australian woman called Nagi. And she, what she talks about is how she had a glittering career in finance, and she gave it all up to be a food blogger. And I just think, you know, it doesn't matter what your job is or what you go on to do, is that sometimes you're going to give up that so-called glittering career, and you're probably going to feel a lot better about it afterwards.
It's just a different adventure, isn't it? Like, we're not here for a very long time. If you spend 40 years on the same career, that feels like a lot of missed opportunities for other adventures.
Yeah, it does. Can we talk a little bit about how you, because you've got a lot of offers. You talk about why you have your offers like that, your different programs and one-to-ones and things, because it fascinates me, because I really should do that, but I don't have as many ideas as you.
I kind of dread this because I think people watched what I did over the last 3 or 4 years and went, wow, that looks like really well thought out. Let me replicate this. I'm like, no, there was no strategy behind this whatsoever. So I don't even, when did I start creating courses? I had a membership about 8 years ago. So I created a couple of courses. I was going to sell them, and then I realized, oh wow, this is going to be really hard work because I have like 100 people on my email list, and I've priced these courses at £20 each. So it's going to be tough going. So I never sold the courses as courses. I b bundled them up and turned it into a membership, and I launched with 40 members at about, I think it was about £30 or £40 a month. So it wasn't an amazing money, but it was enough for me to basically drop one copywriting client so that I could put my effort into having this membership. And so that was the beginning of creating courses because I wanted to create material that was inside the membership. And I don't, and then at some point I wound that up again. I haven't got very good attention span. So after about 18 months, I'm like, yeah, it's time for something new. So I think that grew and it became like a higher touch thing. And then when we were doing the building work, I just couldn't carry on having a membership at the same time. I was like, there's just too much, there's too much. So I wound that up, then I had all these courses. So I released some of them separately. And I kind of got addicted to this pattern of having an idea for something that I knew people would want to learn, pre-selling it to see, like, do you actually want to learn this or not? Like, I'll write the sales page. If enough people buy it on pre-sale, I'll create the course. And I did that like over and over again, maybe 5 or 6 times. It was a great way of making money. It was really low pressure. They sold really well. I felt amazing writing the courses because I was like, I've already been paid to do this. If I worked out my hourly rate, if I'd worked for a client, I'd have earned this money once, but I'd have no course. But I was getting paid, I'd have the course, and then it would keep making money for me in the future. So I did that for a couple of years. So then I just ended up with a whole bunch of courses. I was in Lizzie Goddard's Profitable Playground, which is kind of like a mastermind thing, and that did teach about this model of having lots of different offers at lots of different price points. So I was just kind of addicted to doing that. And then I needed to figure out, how do I keep selling? Like, now they exist, now what? Like, how do you possibly promote like 18 different courses? And I don't love the format of having like two-tier pricing. So you have a price that's the full price on the outside. Then if somebody downloads your freebie, you offer them like a flat, like you've got 3 days or a tripwire price to get it at half price or a third off. And then a couple of times a year, you do another sale and they get the chance. But like, it works. It works. And I'm not saying that other people shouldn't do it. I just wasn't comfortable doing it. And also having 18 products like that, just a lot. Like that was a lot of different price points and checkouts and funnels and things, and I wasn't really enjoying it. So this is the bit that makes me nervous, because I don't want people to go, indeed, this looks excellent, I'm going to do this. I just decided to bundle them all up and make them available as an all access pass. So instead of paying to own a course and people going, which course should I buy next? Which felt like a tight and difficult and uncomfortable decision, and like they were missing out on the other courses because they can only pay for this one course right now. I said, okay, it's £97 for the year. You can have access to everything. So it's kind of like a Netflix subscription for my courses. Knock yourself out. And that felt much more comfortable. I really enjoyed that because it meant that when people said to me, which course should I take? I could say, well, I think probably this one and then this one. So if you just buy this pass, like do these three, and then you'll have had your money's worth and you've still got access to the courses for the rest of the year. But I am not jumping around telling everybody, if you've got lots of offers, you should bundle it up into like an all access pass type deal, because I'm a year into having that and I don't, like I just haven't nailed it down. I haven't got it right yet. I'm enjoying it and people are buying it, and I'm committed to that format, but it's just not at a stage yet where I feel comfortable saying to people, this is an excellent idea and you should do it. But it was just, I was like, I don't know what else to do. Let's try this and see what happens. And it's kind of evolved from there.
But I like that because that's the fun thing about being in business is that you can try things and it should be fun for you. If it isn't fun for you, then you might as well just still be back at the corporate. Experiment and see if it works. And maybe it's not ideal for everybody else, but it works for you and it
And
works for your clients, and that's
it's
all that
given
matters.
something, like people have something to think about now. So people have seen me do it and I always said, just ask me. Just I'm happy to have a conversation about it. There's a reason why I haven't created a course on it yet, because it's just not there yet, but I'm really open to answering questions. So I've had lots of great conversations with people where they just hire me for 20 minutes and they say, I'm thinking of doing the same. What should I know, or what should I avoid? And they don't. A couple of people have settled on almost exactly the same format, but most have taken the idea and then worked it in a slightly different way for them. So, I'm figuring it out in a way that works for me. And I like that it's like another option that's been thrown onto the table. Like, we don't all have to do, there's not all this one way of selling online courses. There's lots of different ways of doing it. And I feel like I've just thrown another option out there and it's fun for people to adapt to. Also, I feel like I need to say I didn't invent that, but the way I'm talking is as if I'm saying I've said let's like I didn't invent that. I'd seen two or three other people do it as well, and I was like, oh man, I wish I had thought of doing that, and then decided, nah, let's just do it anyway, it's not too late.
I suppose it's not always like it's not always going to work if you're selling courses. Like I don't have see my the way I want to work with people is in over like a 3 month period as a project, and I don't know what then they'd be coming back for after that. So I think if you work like that, it's not quite so practical. But I have some little courses, and I like the idea of offering them as well. And you still do one-to-one work, don't you?
I do.
What would be your tips for business owners to be a little bit more creative?
I don't ever think of myself as being creative. So I was that kind of thing really stumps me. And then I look at what I do, like in my home, the way I cook dinner, the way I write, the fact that I'm enjoying learning how to doodle, and I realize like I am creative in a really broad way. Probably more so in writing, but just go, like it doesn't, there's not a particular standard and you don't have to stick to one thing. Like art is not just, that's not the only way to be creative. Maybe you really like arranging, like when you get a bunch of flowers, maybe you put extra special effort into the way that you arrange them. Or when you're wrapping presents, maybe you put extra special effort into the way that they look, or you're decorating the Christmas tree. Or there's areas in your life when you're probably already creative and you don't realize that you're doing it. And so for me, I need to notice where it's already there and lean into that more. And then for me, that makes me a better writer and it helps me think in a more creative way without, I don't have like anything amazingly beautiful to show for it, but it helps me acknowledge that that part of me exists and helps me kind of reconnect with it.
Brilliant. Laura, thank you very much for your time. Where can people find out more about you?
Go to my website, which is wordattitude.co.uk. And if you go to /newsletter, you can join the Comfy Business newsletter, which is definitely the best way to stay in touch with me because I'm not much of a social media person.
And it's a very nice newsletter, and sometimes it features seals.
Okay, the next one's going to be a dog. So,
A dog. Oh, good. Even better. Right. I will let you go and I will speak to you soon. Thanks for your
thank you very
time.
much. Goodbye.
Hi, it's Gudrun. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Apple Cart. If you'd like to be a guest on the show, feel free to get in touch. Alternatively, please recommend the podcast to someone else. I'll see you on the next episode. Bye for now.